Bailout, bailout, bailout of banks and giant corporations, hundreds of millions, trillions from the public treasury transferred to the rich, from Washington to Ottawa to Victoria, that's the mantra. In Vancouver, there's the Olympic Village, and now in BC, there's the Gateway Project, the plan to expand the freeway, Highway 1, and twin the Portman Bridge. The private financing is collapsing, and the provincial government has announced a huge bailout for the private investment bank that is central to the scheme. Eric Doherty, spokesman for the Livable Region Coalition that has opposed the Gateway Project from the beginning, has joined me in the studio to discuss the most recent developments. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you.
What did we know of the financing when the deal was first signed, when the contracts were first let?
Well, we've never really known very much about the financing for this or the estimates. When it was first announced, it was supposed to be an $800 million project. Now the government refuses to say how much it's going to cost. A UK business publication, Project Finance, has revealed that they're looking for $2.3 billion in financing, which indicates that basically the project is now going to cost at least or in the range of three times what it was originally estimated at.
When you say they, who are the business interests that we are loaning the one-third of their costs to?
The lead group in this is a bank, an Australian investment bank called Macquarie. They have a very extensive involvement in public-private partnerships around the world, in health P3s, but they actually specialize to some degree in P3 freeway expansions and building new private-public partnership freeways.
So they were looking, or they are looking, according to this business publication, for $2.3 billion, and the government has, BC is saying it's going to give them one-third of that.
Yes, so the government of BC is going to provide the financing for one-third of that, and we don't know under what conditions they're going to do that. The Minister of Transportation is refusing to reveal the details of the contract. We don't know. But Macquarie Group is going out there asking for this money, and basically the answer they've gotten is no. We don't know why the banks, other banks, are refusing to put up the money, to loan this money. But it may have something to do with the awful record that Macquarie Bank has had in previous year, particularly with a P3 freeway project in Australia called BrisConnex. They let the shares for this at $1. And the same shares are now worth 0.1 cents, so 1/1000th their original value, causing investors around the world to really shake their heads and wonder what is going on at this bank.
So they got the contract originally, and presumably the scheme was to make money on the basis of the tolling that would be charged, but is that even a feasible idea, or do these kind of investment banks have other ways of making money off such projects?
Yeah, usually in a project like this, they will demand a guarantee of some sort from the government of the level of toll revenue, because governments have powers to do things like lower transit fares, provide better transit, put more SkyTrain cars on, which would compete, do all sorts of things that would cut back on their toll revenue. So P3s are actually designed, or they're guaranteed to pollute, because if the government does anything effective to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to reduce pollution by getting cars off the road, this consortium will sue them for damages.
Are there things we really should know about the contract arrangement? What kinds of things would you, if you had a list and said, Well, we barely know very much, and what we do know has come from leaks from business publications, but we want this, and this information. What might be the top things you think the public needs to know as a right to know?
The very first thing would be the cost of the project. That would kind of be nice to know whether this is a $2.3 billion project or a $2.8 billion project. Be kind of important there. Number two would be what kind of guarantees the government is giving over toll revenue, what kind of control the government will have over the toll rates, and what kind of damages we would have to pay if we did something really effective with public transit in this region.
Now, you've also done some surveying of public opinion about this project. Who did that survey and what did you find?
That's a Cinevate survey done for the Livable Region Coalition and the David Suzuki Foundation. They found that two-thirds of people, 69%, would like to see money shifted from freeway expansion to transit in the region. And that's something that's, you might think that's kind of surprising how strong that is, but it's actually something that's seen all over North America now. People are starting to really get tired of this this 1950s idea that you can build your way out of congestion by just making the freeways wider and wider and wider. And people realize now that that doesn't work. Basically, transit is very popular, non-controversial. Freeways have become controversial.
You said two-thirds of people. Does that vary depending on how far out people are from the downtown Vancouver? Or is it just get some sense of maybe differences, if there are such, from Langley's compared with North Surrey?
Yeah, we don't have we can't separate Langley from Surrey, but south of the Fraser, there's still strong support for shifting money from freeways to transit. It's not quite as strong as in the lower mainland municipalities, but it's still in the range of 60%, the high 50s. And a more recent example from Seattle, we saw that when the Transportation Authority in the Seattle region put forward a proposal for freeways and transit, it was rejected all the way across the board. It was a mixed proposal. They put a transit-only plan called Sound Transit on the table, and people, even in the ex-urban municipalities, the really sprawling municipalities far away from the center of Seattle, really broadly supported this transit-only plan.
Was it, when you say people supported, was that based on just those who responded, or was there a kind of voting of some kind on that issue?
Yeah, they did this at the same time as the presidential election. So people around Seattle voted for Obama and buses.
Sort of B-sound there. Now, could we do the same thing here? Are you proposing we do the same thing here?
I am proposing we do the same thing here, and we could, because this deal is falling apart. The same UK business publication that told us how much this project is costing approximately, their same source says that they're really doubtful that they're going to be able to arrange the financing by the end of March. So it's looking like there's not going to be a contract until perhaps, you know, the day before the election or even after the election. And P3s very often fall apart even after final contracts have been signed, particularly if one of the partners in the consortium is having financial difficulties, like Macquarie is. So that's exactly what we're proposing, is to shift this $2.3 billion. And to give you an example, $2.3 billion gives you about enough money to buy 400 buses and run them for 30 years. And that includes the fuel, the maintenance, the driver's salaries, everything. 400 buses for 30 years would make a huge difference in this region.
In terms of not just economics, but obviously in terms of environmental livability and survivability.
Yeah, it would make a very big difference in our greenhouse gas emissions. But, you know, we have to do a lot more than that. We have to give these buses bus lanes. We can't have our buses stuck in traffic anymore.
How would you, we've got a provincial election coming up. Do you see that vote? You'd mentioned in Seattle it coincided with a national election. Would you see proposing that this be put on the ballot as something that could be done at the same time that people are voting for their provincial government?
Yeah, very much so. That's something we should be pushing for. And if we can't get it on the ballot, though, I mean, we should be having be able to vote on these things. Like people in most of the world get to vote on major decisions like this. But if we can't, people can still push to make it an election issue. You know, we may need to make sure that every candidate in the region knows that this is an issue, and that, for instance, the NDP, who have a, they actually have a really quite a good position, but very seldom talk about it. That they're forced to come out and state clearly what they're going to do if they win. What are they going to do if a contract has been signed? Are they going to get a team of lawyers to look at it and see if it can be torn up? And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize about P3s is that after this, because they're such Byzantine complex contracts, very often you can tear them up with very little consequences. BC Hydro was able to do this with the P3 Duke Point power plant when natural gas prices soared. They just waited until the private company missed a deadline, tore up the contract, and told them to go away.
And that was without damages at that point.
Yeah, which is actually fairly unusual. But a $2.3 billion project is likely to cause huge damage. The Gateway project will cause huge damage to our region over the next century. Through pollution, through sprawl, through all of the things that urban freeways have been shown to do to, you know, particularly in U.S. cities. It tears the urban fabric apart. It's really going to be worthwhile us, even if we have to pay $100 million in a penalty to tear up this contract. It needs to be done.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and explaining this.
Thank you, Mark.
I've been speaking with Eric Doherty. He's the spokesperson for the Livable Region Coalition. And to get more information and keep abreast of what's happening, you can check their website. It's simply livableregion.ca.